Okay, questions in German or English?
You can, of course, introduce a new logic operator and call it identity, and then show that that operator isn't extensional. But your argument doesn't show that the logic operator of identity is deduced in predicate logic normally isn't extensional, because when you take that operator, your argument is syntactically ill-formed.
It's ill-formed.
Syntactically ill-formed.
So are you saying, I'm sorry, are you saying ill-formed or informed?
Ill-formed.
Okay.
You have to place singular terms in the argument places of the identity operator.
Yes.
And so you can't put the propositional variable p there, but you have to first transfer, use a singular forming operator, the proposition that p is identical with the proposition that q. And what your argument then shows isn't that identity is intentional, but that the proposition forming operator, the proposition that, that operator is intentional.
But what you haven't said is why I have to do that. Why must I? Why can't I treat propositions as objects like any other in a referential domain, which I can name and refer to?
Because then you're not using the two-place predicate identity as it is used in predicate logic, but you introduce a new logical operator and call it identity.
Well, I don't see why not. I mean, for example, other operators that I use, like negation, attach right to propositions and give me a value. Those kinds of functions do, so why shouldn't a relational function for identity work the same? I mean, what's necessary is that I regard propositions as objects belonging to the referential domain, just like the objects on this table, for example. But if I treat propositions in that way, of course they're abstract, like numbers, then I should be able to name them just as I do numbers. I don't have to, when I write down something about the number pi, I don't have to write down the number pi. I've just named the object.
But that's exactly the difference between the negation operator and the identity sign. You can form syntactically correct sentence by saying Danger Cat is identical with the professor at Bern University, but you cannot form a syntactically valid formed expression by saying not Danger Cat.
That's what I understood to be your position, but I still don't understand why. I still don't understand why you say that. I mean, you refer back to the things we can canonically and cannot and canonically not do, but I see this actually done all the time. I mean, if you can't do that, then it seems like the let me just put it this way. I don't see a reason why you can't do that. Why you can't treat propositions like any other kind of objects.
You can do that, but then you introduce a new logical sign. You call it identity, but you're not talking about the identity as it is used in predicate logic.
I don't know why not. I mean, identity relates objects in the referential domain, and I've got propositions in my referential domain, and I've got names for them. Just as I have a name for, you know, any other object, or like a number or a proposition or a book or a person, or these are all just objects, and they've got names, and some propositions are identical. P is identical to P, for example, and it's not identical to other propositions. I'm not feeling the sense that there ought to be a difference there. Maybe there are other problems with making that assumption further down the line that would cause me to retreat and say, I see. No, it's not. You know, I'm not supposed to name them. I'm not supposed to put them in an identity relation. But I'm thinking of identity just as we ordinarily use it.
I thought the objection was you cannot take propositions as objects and as propositions, so you cannot put an identity sign between two propositions and write the negation sign for the same thing, in front of the same thing. I thought this was the objection meant to be. So You have to do it either way, but you cannot have it both ways, and you need to.
But I'm still not getting a reason for that. So if I say P is the same proposition as Q, nothing prevents me from saying, by the way, P is false.
I mean, it's an object of the domain. You cannot negate an object in your domain.
Well, why not if it's a proposition? I mean, I can't divide other objects in my domain by two, but I can divide four by two. I mean, the objects in my domain will have a variety of different properties, and they will belong appropriately within a variety of different functional contexts. And you can't expect that you can do the same thing with every one of the objects. I mean, I can't say that a person is false, but I can say that a proposition is false. I can say that a person is a woman, but I can't say that a proposition is a woman. But that just means that different objects in the referential domain have different properties, and that we can make category mistakes if we try to cross over those categories. But that doesn't suggest to me that a proposition can't can't belong to a variety of different have a variety of different kinds of properties. So, for example, if I would say that if P is identical to Q, and if not P, then presumably also not Q. So I'm making an inference there. And I'm making the inference with both of these assumptions.
I'm not getting it. But may I ask another question? You said that, I mean, one of the options is, I mean, one of the options you mentioned was giving up the tables. And then you said, well, we do not want to give up from the conjunction being following logical equivalence.
Right.
We don't mean
the opposite. The opposite.
You mean,
the equivalence follows from the conjunction.
Yes. But
so I say.
Not logical equivalence, but only material equivalence.
No, logical equivalence. No, do the truth tree, do the truth table. From P and Q, it follows that P if and only if Q.
Yes.
In the standard.
But it's material equivalent, not logical. Logical equivalence we have, if in all rows you've got it.
In all worlds.
Not in all rows you've got the...
Yeah, well, that's what you have. I mean, I can take the time and do the tree and do the truth table if you want.
Okay, there's a bottle on the table and there's a pen on the table.
Yes.
Okay, they are material, the two propositions. There's a bottle on the table and the proposition is a pen on the table.
Right.
A material equivalent, and that follows from the conjunction.
Okay.
But they are not...
Okay, let me do it. Let me do it then. What do you prefer, trees or tables?
Tables.
Okay. So here's. I'm sorry. Can you raise this to my seat just like this? We suppose that P and Q, right? So it's true here, and it's false here, and it's false here, and it's false here.
Not true.
Sorry?
That's true, it's true.
This one is true?
Yes.
No, it's conjunction. Not if it's...
Oh, it's conjunction. Sorry.
Conjunction.
Okay. Okay.
So, but it's not logical equivalence here.
That's right. That's right. Well, let me try the tree. They've got a coincide. So something is not right. See, the difference here is we suppose that P and Q is true. Here we're just looking at the value of P and Q in cases where it's true and also where it's not true. But I'm supposing that the conjunction of snow is white and grass is green, that conjunction is true. So suppose it is true, and then ask, is it possible for P if and only if Q to be false? And you don't get that it is because you have P and Q, and then you have P not Q and not P Q, and they're both true. So here, what we're doing is we're considering all the possible cases for P and Q, including those cases where it's false. But since we're assuming that it's true that both grass is green and snow is white, we're really only dealing with this case. And in that case,
so these two propositions are logically equivalent. The bottle is on the table, the pen is on the table.
Yes, those would be logically equivalent then. Because
this is a very strange notion. I mean, for logical equivalence, you need a T in all of the rows here. I mean, there's a definition.
Let me try it this way. I mean, here, let's have P. How does this work? All right, so you have P and Q, and we're supposing that that's true, or if it's true, then P if and only if Q is the relevant proposition, okay? So now over here, we've got true, false, false, false. Here we've got true, in this case, false, and true, right? So this is true. You say we have to have it true all the way down. This is true all the way down.
Yeah, that means that this implication is logically necessary.
But that's all I'm doing. I'm saying these two propositions are true. Snow is white and grass is green are true. And from that we can, that implies, this is a tautology after all.
Yes.
So it implies that P if and only if Q.
It implies material equivalence of these two things, yes.
Well,
but not that P and Q are logically equivalent.
The consequent is not a tautology.
In this case, where both P and Q are true, the equivalence holds.
Yes.
That's the only case I'm interested in.
So the one thing materially implies the other, that's okay. But I mean, the whole thing is even.
But that's all I'm. That's all I. Well, that's all I'm saying because, look, I've got P and Q, and I've got this tautology, so I can validly detach P if and only if Q. And on the strength of P if and only if Q, I try to make the substitution, which then fails.
Okay, there is help.
It's an inference in sequence. Yeah.
Okay, well, a different question. I think he said that what makes Sherlock Holmes fictional is that he's incomplete, and I found that striking. Couldn't there just be a very long, boring fiction that was complete about a character, and the character would still be fictional, because nothing would actually...
But I don't think it'll be complete. I mean, because imagine trying in real time to describe all of the properties that an object like this has.
But maybe a very simple object would just have mass and charge and location or something. It could be a fictional subject.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it would have all these relational properties to every other property in the universe. I think to give a complete specification of it, for it to actually have those properties, rather than to have some selection of them that an author of a fiction chooses to describe, I think that, in fact, it would be impossible to give a complete description of an existent object.
But you do think that, could there be a complete... A complete false description? A complete description which nevertheless does not
apply to any existent object. Well, I don't see how it could be complete. I mean, if your question is just to me, could there be one, then my opinion is that there could not. And my reason is that there are always, I mean, you can think about this in different ways. I mean, Charles Sanders Peirce talked about the dynamic object, which in Husserlian terms always presents us with another horizon. And so we never exhaust the possible true descriptions of a dynamic object, an object that's in real space-time. So that's how I would distinguish between fictional and real objects, that the real objects, among other things, are contradiction-free and they are complete.
They have complete descriptions of the object themselves.
In the abstract, they have complete descriptions.
Okay.
And the trouble is we don't have any...
I'm sorry.
Okay, that's all right.
In 5 minutes, the next section.
That's fine.
Sorry.
That's fine.
So
thank you.
Thanks a lot.